Hello, and welcome to this Alt-REU podcast. My name is Nicholas Carolyn, and for 8 weeks this summer, I've been working on a project titled Predicting Opioid Overdoses in Pennsylvania. For this project, I built computational models to forecast the risk of opioid abuse and fatal opioid overdoses in my home state of Pennsylvania. The current opioid crisis is the largest and most deadly drug epidemic in this nation's history. For the past 20 years, over 450,000 Americans have died from an overdose, whether from a well-known prescription drug like OxyContin or an illegal street drug like heroin or fentanyl. In my home state of Pennsylvania, there can be 10 fatal opioid overdoses every day. I developed machine learning models trained on health and demographic data sets from the CDC, the U.S. Census Bureau, and the Pennsylvania state government. Two distinct models resulted. The first is a regression model predicting the number of fatal opioid overdoses per 100,000 residents of a county. Using demographic features selected through linear regression, it employs a feed-forward neural network to predict death rates for the current year. The second model involves time series analysis on statewide administrations of the anti-overdose drug naloxone by emergency medical services. Using a recurrent neural network architecture, it predicts daily statewide administrations of naloxone by EMS, albeit with more limited performance. I talked with my advisor, Dr. Wayne Wakeland, about the models and their performance. Here's part of our conversation. Could start with the regression model, which attempts to predict the opioid-induced death rate for a county. This is taken from CDC data, and it's regressing on a bunch of different demographic factors.
Socio, or mostly just, well, I guess you'd call it socio.
Yeah, so they are mean household income, poverty rate, unemployment rate, labor force participation rate. So,
okay.
A lot of economic.
Yeah. Standard, I guess, sometimes abbreviated SES or whatever, socioeconomic status.
Yeah. So I'll share my screen with you so you could take a look at.
Okay.
Some of the results.
And so what factors does it load heavily on? Oh, that's kind of cool. I like that.
Oh yeah, this is just a look at how all the different factors correlate with each other.
Yeah.
If we want to check out the factors individually, these are some sort of preliminary plots.
Which package are you using for this?
This is Matplotlib.
Okay.
So some of these graphs, if you were just to look at it without considering gear, it would not be a particularly strong relationship, but the color here represents year. And for some of them in particular, for something like unemployment rate, if you were to just look at this and these are all the same color, this wouldn't look, I mean, it would have certainly some shape, but
yeah,
perhaps in fact the opposite of what we would suspect. Matt. You know,
yeah.
You assume a higher unemployment rate, it's more people dying of opioids, but which is the case when you actually segment by year. So you can see, look, yellow is 2018, I believe. So,
well, that just tells you that there's something else going on pretty big, which is fentanyl. So that's not accounted for here, but it's highly correlated with the fact that it's a very recent phenomenon. Mm-hmm.
So this regression model, I'll show you the actual code. It's just a simple feed-forward neural network, two hidden layers. Each of them has 64 neurons. See, this is its performance over training. Mm-hmm. It's early stopping on validation set. And this is the plot I showed you. These are predictions for the test set. On the x-axis, we have the actual death rate, and
it's correlated pretty well. That's good.
Yeah,
like you said, your prediction rate's about 50%.
Yeah, explained variance, I think, is about 45%.
45%.
So most of these are pretty good. They've got some, of course, outliers here.
You're always going to have outliers in this kind of data.
Yeah. But considering how, in some ways, pretty simple this model is, it's a reasonably good result.
Yeah. I mean, and what's good about it is it's simple enough that you don't feel like you're really overfitting it. So that's why you're getting better prediction. You could maybe train a better fit, but maybe not generalize better with a much more complex network.
Yeah. And all the factors that go into it are things that are intuitive, logically, we'd assume. Different economic factors.
Can you interpret, I don't know much about neural network modeling, so I'm kind of naive here, but can you interpret the parameters that it finds, the way it loads, the way it weights? Is it not interpretable? I'm sure people figure out a way to interpret it, partially at least. By interpret, I mean, can you talk about how it, I mean, if it put heavy weights on a factor, then you call that an explanatory factor. And if it didn't put much weight on it, then you call it a non-selected factor, essentially, even though it might have a little bit of weight, or how does that work?
Yeah, it would go as you described. And I think there's there's definitely like visualization libraries out there where you could.
You've got two layers. So that the layer that's closest to the inputs is the one that's going to be the most interpretable. That next layer is going to be kind of harder to figure out, probably, or maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we might think for the second layer, that might represent more what we would consider a latent factor, something.
Sort of like clusters or.
Yeah, like a combination of factors, right. A cluster.
Pattern, some people call it pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
2019 death rate values because they're from the CDC and they haven't published them yet. I think for some of the features as well, we might not have up-to-date information from a reliable source for 2019 or 2020.
Yes.
Certainly some of them we do, like unemployment rate. But for those where I don't, I'll just carry over the most recent values. Certainly for things like population, it's not going to change very much. And that'll all get up on the website as one of the main features.
Go ahead. Tell me what I'm looking at here.
Okay. So for time series analysis, we have two different data sets, one coming from state police and one coming from EMS, emergency ambulance services. This is data every incident from 2018 to quite recently, middle of the summer for both sets, of all the naloxone administrations that they've done. And so to turn this into a time series format, I aggregated all of the administrations for each day. So what we're looking at here is a graph of how many incidents the police responded to a given day over our time frame. And we have a similar thing here for EMS. And actually, if we go to the website, and we can see there's a pretty nice correlation between the two of them. It's pretty strongly overlapping.
Does this suggest that there's some seasonality somehow to this phenomenon of drug use? Or what? Why is it sort of quasi-periodic looking, you know? Maybe that's just an illusion.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was suspecting. There's certainly some periodic scale on a weekly scale. I did some analysis of this.
Yeah.
People use it more on Friday and Saturday.
That's something that you could adjust. You could actually take that out with an intelligent artificial variable or seasonality variable. You could easily do that. Yeah. But anyway, it doesn't really, at this scale, it doesn't make it so you can't see the sort of longer term trend, which is, it's kind of disappointing. I mean, the drug crisis has accelerated. We have this early run up and then this sort of going sideways, which is not what I would have expected to see.
Yeah. We might hope that because this is naloxone administrations, that maybe this, you know, stagnation is reflecting, increased prevalence of naloxone or increased
by lay persons, yeah. Maybe. Yeah. And more observations, more careful drug use. Maybe we hope it would be a good thing. But if we lay death rates over the top of this, I don't think it's gonna lay there. I mean, I think the death rates have gone up.
Yeah, death rates. Well, they've peaked in 2017 for most counties. So
okay, and so this data is later. So this is in that later, very end of that time series.
Yeah, this starts at the last observation here.
Yeah,
okay. 2018. So
yeah, it could be abating everywhere. The work I'm doing is in Dallas, and Dallas didn't get lit up by fentanyl like the East Coast did. So it's quite different, and that's one of the big challenges. Okay, what happens if and when fentanyl gets to Dallas? So I've had to make some guesses about that. I'm not the right person to make those guesses, but the methods I use, I got to power them somehow. But this is encouraging in the sense that if it's the case it may be that the EMS use shows a little bit of an increase here recently. But that could be, if it's that current, it could be COVID related even.
Yeah, I think that might be explains that this sort of here is summer 2020.
Yeah. So, but it's not too horrible. I've heard some just anecdotal information that drug use is way up. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's conceivable that it is. So. Yeah.
So for both the police and the EMS data, I set up what is called an LSTM, or a long short-term memory, which is a recurrent neural network model. So what it will do is, given a sequence of past inputs, let's say this will be like overdose counts, it'll predict the next one after the end of that sequence. And it does this
almost impossible task.
It's a very difficult task. And as we can see, I believe with the police, with the police data, it is basically an impossible task where you're explaining no variance at all, pretty much, because there's such a high degree of variance in the number of overdoses by day.
If there's a trend at all, it's negligible. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that gives it almost the EMT data set. If you train it, is it going to be able to figure out that that's moving upward there? In other words, how does it, it must have some skill at detecting. So
it would we can look at the results for the EMS. So the EMS model actually did certainly better than the police model. And we can see, as you're describing, there is an upward trend in.
Yeah. And it detects that and exploits it. So does it get a little bit better prediction score?
Yeah, so this is about 17% explained variance.
Right. So I'm kind of glad to see that this one at least gave you some prediction capability, because there was something to use for it. So that kind of satisfied. Mm-hmm.
Additional information about the models, along with visualizations related to our discussion, can be found on the project website. To see the impact my project might have on the local community, I've invited someone who has firsthand experience dealing with the opioid crisis. I'm here with my friend Braden Dammitz. Braden is someone who's very familiar with the impact of opioids on the local community. He's an EMT, a volunteer firefighter, and a nursing student at DeSales University, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me today.
Before we begin discussing the models, let's talk about your own experience. You're very active as a first responder. Could you talk about where you work and what you do there?
Of course. I'm an emergency medical technician and volunteer firefighter for several local emergency services agencies. I've been involved in emergency services for about 4.5 years now. Currently, I'm employed by Macungie Ambulance Corps in Macungie, Pennsylvania, Upper Saucon Ambulance Corps in Center Valley, Pennsylvania, Easton Emergency Squad in the city of Easton in Pennsylvania. I'm also a firefighter EMT at the Western Salisbury Volunteer Fire Company in Salisbury Township, Pennsylvania, where I also serve as the medical officer. As far as my responsibilities, I respond to 911 calls for a variety of medical emergencies. These include, but are not limited to, cardiac emergencies, respiratory emergencies, psychiatric emergencies, neurological emergencies such as strokes and seizures, diabetic issues, traumatic injuries, motor vehicle collisions, terrain and water rescues, fires, sick persons, faintings, falls, shootings, stabbings, and of course, overdoses. When it comes to opioid overdoses, we regularly administer a synthetic opioid antagonist medication called naloxone, which is commonly referred to by the brand name Narcan. This medication is typically indicated for the complete or partial reversal of opiate-induced respiratory depression secondary to opiate narcotics or related drugs. Such drugs would be things such as codeine, oxycodone, morphine, methadone, fentanyl, hydromorphone, or heroin. We're able to administer naloxone both intravenously, intraosseously, intramuscularly, and intranasally. So that is basically the summary of where I work and what I really do on the job when it comes to overdoses.
During the course of a normal month, about how many opioid-related calls would you normally respond to?
Unfortunately, I don't have access to the actual statistical data regarding incident frequencies and categories at any of my agencies, but I would say that roughly, probably at least 1 in 20 calls involves opioids, whether it's a psychiatric emergency due to an opioid incident, an unconscious overdose, an assault, motor vehicle collision. We see opioids kind of behind the scenes fairly often.
Do you think the problem's getting better or worse locally?
I would say generally worse when I've seen the data, especially at the state and county level overall, especially over the last few years, both the incident frequency and also the death rate has seen definitely an incline over the last few years. And I would say I've definitely witnessed that firsthand increasing in the local area.
Do you think that's related to fentanyl use?
I'm not sure if it's directly from fentanyl, or a lot of different experts you talk to will say it comes out of the prescription opioid issues, where people are prescribed opioids for general surgery or anything like that, and then they kind of become hooked on them. So a lot of experts attribute the upward trend to that incident, in addition to the fentanyl, for sure.
Have you noticed any patterns in your responses to opioid overdoses, whether that be distribution between rural and urban areas, age, gender, the type of drug, something like that?
I don't think so. I would say for type of drug, I think we see heroin most often, because typically that's one of the drugs that people most frequently overdose on, especially when they don't know what exactly it's laced with. But as far as rural or urban, age, gender, I would say that's one of the other issues, is there's not a particular trend. Obviously, you see a higher occurrence in the more urban areas, like the cities, just because of a higher population. But as far as like gender and all that, there's not a trend. You see it in rich neighborhoods, you see it in poor neighborhoods, you see it in both genders. It's really all over the place. And I think that's one of the issues they're having with trying to get it under control.
It's really interesting to hear. So for this AltRU program, I've developed several models that try and predict the number or the rate of overdoses on the county level in Pennsylvania. These models use machine learning to try and learn relationships directly from data about naloxone administrations or about overdose death rates. One model predicts the opioid death rate in terms of deaths per 100,000 due to opioids for each county. And the other model uses time series analysis to predict the number of naloxone administrations across the entire state per day. Would this information, in your opinion, be helpful to first responders or to local governments?
I think the information you could gather from these programs that you're working on would be helpful more so to the local governments than the first responder. For us on the street, I would say we're prepared going in to work every day with no matter what comes at us. But I would say for in terms of local government, I'm sure you've recently seen a lot of like local police departments will now carry naloxone as well. So I think if you know your community is prone to opioid related overdoses and you see that there's definitely an upward trend in them, that might be able to push you to apply for a grant or budget funding for naloxone use, as well as on more of a, that would be more of a, like a township level, whereas on a county level, you could also try to budget more money if you see that opioid overdose deaths or just opioid overdoses are increasing. You could also establish more programs for rehab and other things like that.
All right. Well, Braden, thanks for joining me.
No problem. Thank you for having me.